Episode 30, Seattle Mariners.
June 2nd, 1990, Kingdom.
A man all alone with himself, but not all alone here, as 24,000 incredibly rabid Mariner fans are looking for that final strike. That will set Mariner history. Here comes the left-hander's wind. The 0-2 pitch on the way. Swing! It's over! He has done it! High fastball, Randy Johnson being mobbed by Scott Bradley down to greet him and the entire Mariner team here on the 2nd of June. It ends at 9:51 Pacific Daylight Time. Randy Johnson with the first Mariner no-hitter in history, and they are going crazy. Everybody saluting the tallest man to ever put on a uniform in the history of baseball. Randy Johnson has done it. He has no-hit the Detroit Tigers tonight, 2-0. My, oh my.
Wouldn't it be great if you could get a PhD in life through baseball? Welcome to Baseball PhD, a tour company for your brain. 30 major league teams, 100 places to see. Let's touch them all as we make the road trip of a lifetime.
It's a beautiful day for baseball.
Hi, I am Ed Kasputis.
I'm Farley Dillinger.
And I'm Mark Rantala.
Welcome to Baseball PhD. This podcast is featuring the Seattle Mariners. Since our last podcast, we've made some exciting changes to our website, www.baseballphd.net. First, we added a post and three videos about the Mariner Moose. Learn about this lovable mascot, watch him dance with the fake umpire, run Coco Crisp over with an ATV, and get hurt at the Kingdome. Second, we added a post and video called Playing Catch with Dad. Learn about Todd Cook, his blog, but more importantly, his baseball PhD love for his children as they explore the baseball world together. Third, we added a post and three videos about Seattle. Learn about America's 15th largest city and the capital of the Pacific Northwest. Fourth, we added a post and video titled Joy in Seattle. The Mariners have never appeared in a World Series. Watch this video and see why there is still joy in Seattle, even if mighty Ken Griffey Jr. has just struck out. Don't forget that you can follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter address is twitter.com/baseballphd. We send our tweets out every time we post. We'll be right back from stunning Safeco Field right after the little kid says the magic words.
Earl Jackson of Seattle is here to deliver the praise that starts each game at Safeco Field. Let's hear it, Jackson.
And here we are in the Emerald City, Seattle, Washington.
Yeah, this is beautiful. And Safeco Field, it is iconic. It looks really great. All these new stadiums, I mean, how can you complain about them not being wonderful? We are in one of the most isolated areas. We're in the farthest northwest part of the country. There's nothing really within driving distance. You fly into Seattle, but let's not forget, now we're very close to the border, the Canadian border, and I kind of consider Vancouver the sister city, and they've got some nice train connections. You could literally start in Portland, take the train, and end up at the foot of Safeco Field. Farley, let's talk about Safeco Field. What year was it built?
Sure. Well, it opened back in 1999. It has a capacity of 46,621. It's at the edge of Pioneer Square in the south part of downtown. And it is, of course, Safeco Field, otherwise known as The Safe.
Yeah, I never heard anybody call it the Safe. You know, Safeco is just as easy. And what is Safeco, the naming rights? What does that company do?
Well, I feel very insured there.
They sell insurance, yes, and financial products until the market goes down, and then they say it wasn't their fault, okay?
Not so safe.
Yeah. Nobody called me on my investments a couple years ago saying, warning, Will Robinson.
They did also do real estate development.
Did they? Safeco did?
Yeah. In fact, here in Cleveland, they were the owners of Severance Town Center.
Oh.
The very first enclosed regional mall in Cleveland.
In Cleveland Heights?
Yes.
Wow. And that was ahead of its time, what, 1960?
Early 60s.
So think even how shopping centers have changed, because in a week, guys, we're going to where? Mall of America. We're going to see the ultimate of gluttony and capitalism and all that stuff. And so you're telling me that Severn Shopping Center was one of the first.
One of the first enclosed regional malls here. Actually, we didn't mention in Kansas City, but the very first shopping center in the United States was Country Club Shopping Center in Kansas City.
Wow.
The second one was in Cleveland.
Okay.
Shaker Square.
Good, good. Now, getting to Safeco Field. If you're driving on I-5, follow signs for Safeco Field. Next to Safeco Field is Quest Field. Very, very beautiful dome stadium for the Seattle Seahawks. And that's the site where the King Dome used to be. And I've talked to many people from Seattle who have many fond memories of the King Dome. And yeah, that surprised me too. I'm like, wasn't that your Metro Dome? It's like, listen, it kept us dry. We are honored to have a major league team. We have a lot of great memories of that.
They didn't do so well with their first major league team, the Seattle Pilots.
And refresh my memory, where did the Seattle Pilots move to?
Milwaukee Brewers.
They went to be the Milwaukee Brewers.
And the Brewers replaced the Milwaukee Braves, who had been the Boston Braves, who became the Atlanta Braves.
Right. So there's all kinds of bloodlines going on here. Best bang for the buck. I sat by home plate, and I had a great time. I bought a club seat, spent some extra money. Fans, just like all the other ballparks, knowledgeable, friendly. I had the honor to sit next to a retired naval officer, and we're talking about, you know, Tom Clancy type things on American readiness and all this. In a nutshell, we're like 50 years ahead of our competitor countries in terms of technology and all that. They got boats. We've got a naval fleet that scares the heck out of any dictator. So that's good to know.
Yes.
Flagship radio station is KOMOAM 1000. And the pregame rituals, they've got plenty of pubs and eats along Pioneer Square, which is a short walking distance to the ballpark. And, you know, people are hanging out on patio areas beyond center field before and during the game. And even if you're on a budget, you can bring food into the ballpark with lots of vendors outside the yard selling grub at much cheaper prices. And I was amazed at that.
Yeah, that's really an unusual item.
That's an unusual item. And photo ops, exterior, they've got a large size player collages outside the ballpark as well as the artwork. When you walk inside, they've got a very nice rotunda, just like you do when you walk into Citi Field or Tropicana Field or Park. So that's very nice. Top shelf. When you go to Safeco Park, you are not going to complain or make up any reason why you didn't have a bad time.
Did the train noise bother you?
No.
I always think it's funny when you see them on TV and the train goes by just outside the outfield fence and you hear it going, because it basically is just 50 feet or something past the stadium.
That's those same train tracks that brought me there from the airport. So
Are they really?
Yeah, oh. Yeah. So, I mean, they had freight trains going by too. But when you're at a game with 40,000 people, you're talking to a retired naval officer who's smarter than you. I didn't hear the choo-choo trains. I wasn't trying to hear them and all that.
But did you get to spend any quality time with the Mariner Moose?
Not quality time, but he's a good mascot for that region. I didn't even have an opportunity to shake his hand or make eye contact. I usually try to make eye contact with all mascots, try to spook them a little bit and all that. But anybody that goes to Seattle and goes to a game, I mean, there's going to be no rainouts. It's a beautiful ballpark. It's around a nice area. You know, it's not Inner Harbor, Baltimore, but it's a nice area. And when it's connected, where you're close to Vancouver, you can drive to Portland and all that. It's definitely a section of a country that every American should see. They're having fun in Washington.
And you probably had a whole bunch of very caffeinated people Because there's more coffee shops in Seattle with the Starbucks.
I don't know why. Just all those Starbucks.
Yeah. In fact, one of you two guys gave me the trivia thing that they're finding caffeine in their wastewater?
Yeah, in the runoff water. There have been some this is about probably 6 or 7 years ago, a kind of report came out that they were just testing runoff water from the Seattle area. And apparently so many people, you know, pitching the last of their coffee with a couple of grounds in them, you know, and it just runs into the wastewater system, and there was caffeine in the wastewater. I don't know if that's still the case, but it was some years ago.
So is all of Seattle like on jitters from too much coffee?
No, but the fish are.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. The fishermen are complaining that the fish have attitude.
Yeah, right. The fish have attitude.
You know, but no, I thought, in fact, no, when I was walking around Pioneer Square, I think I saw a couple guys from the Mod Squad, where like they had these big old hairs and all this, and it's like, is this 1964? I think they've got a sophisticated yuppie hippie element in San Francisco, or not in Seattle. And the other thing I read, the most educated city in America, 53% of their residents have at least a 4-year degree. I didn't pick that up either. I mean, I didn't think they were dumb, but I wasn't walking around thinking that all these guys were Googling all day long and had more information than I did. But it's a very, very, very nice city. The only regret I have, baseball PhDers, I cheated. I flew to Seattle in the morning. I went to a day game, and then I took the red eye home back to Cleveland. I cheated. In a perfect world, I would have wanted to stay in Seattle for a day or two, go to, you know, Grey's Anatomy, see, you know, their hospital in Seattle, the mythical one. You know, it's like, where is it? I know it's here. I see it every week.
Well, you definitely could have, you know, went and saw the Space Needle if you had time there and took a nice walk along the waterfront and had a nice view of Puget Sound.
And probably taken one of the ferries that they use as the background in all these Sleepless in Seattle movies.
Or even Grey's Anatomy. And I didn't. I felt bad. That's against the spirit of baseball PhD. I didn't stop and smell the roses.
Yeah, but that was because you were smelling all the coffee.
I was smelling the coffee, and you know what? To get to all 30 ballparks and stay married, sometimes you got to get your heck, you got to get home. So that's what happened to me there. But so I cheated a bit.
The logical side trip, though, was probably a day trip up to Vancouver.
With a passport.
Right.
Back into the same Toronto paradigm where you need your government papers. And, you know, if I was in Seattle with my 7 kids, I don't know if I would get 7 passports for that mythical day trip.
I will tell you, I've been to Vancouver, British Columbia. I went some years ago, and I was there for a corporate meeting. And it's quite a city, you know. It's up there in Canada, and there's kind of not a lot else around it. It is by the Pacific Ocean. But it's quite a metropolis, and there's a big Asian influence there in the architecture, in the food, in the population. It's kind of where North America meets Asia.
Right.
And it's a very interesting city. Now, I had the unusual circumstance of arriving there on September 10th, 2001. And so I got to stay a little longer than anticipated, which turned out actually to be a good thing because it gave us an opportunity to see a lot more Vancouver than I would have, because we wound up staying until Saturday instead of Wednesday.
That brushes off my memory because you left me. We were in Chicago watching some
Cubs.
Wrigley Field. You go to Vancouver to await the terrible tragedy. I'm still in Chicago.
Right.
So you weren't even in the United States.
Right.
When
you had the option to rent a car and drive home.
And that's what I did after like a day or two. They didn't have cars available right away.
Yeah.
Wow. So.
But Vancouver's a great place. If you can go there as part of a side trip, you know, a day I would say is maybe even too short. But if you can go up there and spend a night and do some things in Vancouver, it's a pretty cool place to see.
We'll be right back with more things Seattle.
Never forget, our website is baseballphd.net.
Let me give you my baseball PhD deep thought. One of the things on my bucket list, Alaska. I want to go where the Eagles are big and the Grizzlies are big and all that. Strategically, I want to go to Alaska during baseball season. I don't want to go to Alaska during the NBA season or toward the end of the NFL season. So I would use Seattle as my hub to spend a couple days there and forget the Canadian government. I'm leapfrogging over them, and I'm flying to Alaska to meet my fellow Americans and say, how the heck are you? Why are you guys up here? It's so far. Remember, the hub of Alaska Airlines is in Seattle. And I would do that. And I'll tell you, I once researched a trip. I didn't tell my family because if I did, they would have made me do it. My fantasy was Seattle, Alaska. What the heck? Hawaii. You're there. It's not that far. And Alaska Airlines flies to all of those. So if going to Alaska is on your bucket list, use Seattle as your strategic hub and say, I'm getting to Seattle because I love Alaska. And that's why I'll do it.
And also you can cruise from Seattle up to
exactly.
Alaska. And people who have taken the Alaskan cruise say it's the best cruise you can take anywhere.
Because you're seeing stuff that's not accessible by car. So you're going to see two different Alaskas. Take the cruise and see all the people living along the Pacific, you know, with the seals and freezing. And, oh, there's an orca. Get away. He's coming after us. And then once you get inland to the Fairbanks and all that, you can fly back home and all that and see the different Alaska. So I agree. So Alaska would be the one big thing that I would want to see. You got to bring a windbreaker, even for a day game. It's the same effect of San Francisco and all that. But once again, the retired naval officer taught me they have very mild winters. So they're stuck in like the 40, 50, 62 degree zone all year.
And the rain zone, because it rains every other day in Seattle.
Yeah, no, because I cheated, I saw no rain. I'd say you're lying to me.
You're batting 1,000, Ed.
Yeah, I'm batting 1,000. So, but, you know, so discovering the Emerald City, it's one of the prettiest cities anywhere. A good website is www.ceseseattle.org. And when we talk about their media, the big paper, you got the Seattle Times and the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. So they're a two-city town, two-newspaper town, which is very good. And, you know, in April and May, they've got college baseball at the University of Washington. Can't go to the NBA anymore. That is the one thing that surprised me on why anyone would want to take an NBA town, NBA team out of Seattle. I view that as a thriving good thing. And they went to Oklahoma City. But you just had a guy from Oklahoma City who was able to buy the team. So the question will be, when will the NBA figure out how to get a team back into Seattle?
Yeah, I think that Seattle had the arena problem. It was getting small.
Really? And then you got the Seahawks at beautiful Quest Field. You know, if you plan a late trip, like a September-ish trip to Seattle, you might be able to time it where you can see both. But Quest Field looked really good. Brand new, the Dome Stadium. So they're having fun in Seattle. They've got some outstanding football and baseball venues.
You know, I figured out why they're sleepless in Seattle.
Why?
All that coffee.
Yeah. Caffeine in the water.
Yeah, I guess, you know, but the Starbucks must not have done any product placement because I didn't see, you know, their logo.
You know, I was thinking about that. I have never seen a Starbucks in a baseball field anywhere.
In a baseball field?
Yeah, in a field.
I'll have to research it, but I thought I saw one at Chase Field, but I'll check. I mean, okay. That just might not be their marketing strategy. Their marketing strategy is to build one across the street from the other one so that everyone can take a right turn into the, you know, like, then you're reading the Wall Street Journal where maybe that's not a good idea. They're going to close them down, and it's come on.
But you know why they're going to close them down is they bought Seattle's best coffee, and in the last 6 months, they've opened 30,000 places where you can buy Seattle's best coffee, which is owned by Starbucks.
What?
Yes.
What?
They
That's like Coke buying Pepsi.
Seattle's best is it now in all the Burger Kings and all the Subways. So in 6 months, they expanded their distribution by 30,000 locations.
Okay, so now I have to ask this. We're really going off the track here, but are they using the same beans? Because I can buy Seattle's best coffee at the grocery store in the bag next to the Starbucks coffee, and it's a couple bucks cheaper.
Got me. I don't know. I don't. All right. I don't drink coffee.
Juan Valdez will be on the next podcast.
Now, let's not forget about Seattle's hidden gem, Lake Union. Whether it's a seaplane landing or a paddling kayaker, Lake Union is the true Seattle with houseboats, including the famous one from Sleepless in Seattle, lining this picturesque lake. I have to rewatch the movie. I don't remember that houseboat. But, you know, off the beaten path, you've got the beaches of West Seattle. And getting away, I mean, like we said, since you're in the Pacific Northwest, outside Seattle, it's hard to confine it to plains. But you've got the San Juan Islands are a favorite getaway because of the pristine beauty and wildlife. And, you know, that's just a good place to go. Next up, a father who was born and raised in Seattle. His heart still belongs to Seattle, even though he lives in Pennsylvania. We're going to talk about his baseball blog, his son Tim, and their love for the game.
Send us your ideas and comments. Our email is ideas@baseballphd.net. We'd love ideas for new shows, comments about past shows, or even pictures from your baseball road trips. ideas@baseballphd.net.
A great baseball PhD. Welcome to Todd Cook in Reading, Pennsylvania. How are you today?
I'm doing excellent today. Thank you.
Now, I found your website, and you've got to tell our viewers or our listeners about your website. What does your website do?
I have a MLB blog, which is cookandsonbats.mlbblogs.com, where essentially I started out before my son was born. My son's name is Tim, thinking about all the great Mariners games I had been to and that I had no record of any of it, thinking of what the Mariners' record would have been overall and all the great players I would have seen. So I started it essentially to track everything that Tim and I have done throughout his life as being a baseball fan.
So you're putting all these pictures and memories up on the blog. I mean, what you are, Todd, you're a sophisticated, manly scrapbooker using blog technology so that 30 years from now, your son, as he looks at this digital scrapbook, is going to say, "Dad, thank you. Now I understand my life because I forgot all this stuff, but I can keep looking back at it. And I remember Ichiro, even though he's been out of the major leagues for 20 years now."
You're exactly right, and I've never thought of it as a manly, sophisticated scrapbooker, but that is exactly right. What I do. And I actually got a new camera midway through last season, and just last weekend in New York, I actually turned the 10,000 picture mark on that camera already.
10,000 so pictures.
I document what we do.
So you document what you do. So let's say you take, last week, did you take your son to New Yankee Stadium?
Yeah, I think it was last week.
Do you get to the stadium about an hour and a half early and you're taking pictures of batting practice and all the accoutrements around the stadium? And I mean, how detailed do you get?
We always go to batting practice. We like to try to, you know, catch a ball at a game. So we go to batting practice. I like to, you know, everywhere we go, and Tim is 4.5 and has been to 23 stadiums.
That's mind-boggling.
I like us to see the entire stadium. One of the things I really like to do is take panoramic views. So I actually have a link on my site where you can go and see, I don't know how many, but I would estimate probably at least 100 panoramic views from different locations in, you know, the 23 stadiums that we've been to.
You've taken a 4.5-year-old to 23 stadiums. What are the 7 stadiums you have not been to yet?
There's actually more than that because we've been to 3 that have been closed, Shea Stadium, Old Yankee Stadium, and the Metrodome.
Okay.
So we haven't been to Target Field. Okay. We haven't been to Comerica, the 2 Floridas in Georgia, Kansas City, St. Louis, and the 2 Texas.
Okay.
And Colorado.
So of what you guys have been to so far, the 20 out of the 30, what's your most magical stadium?
I'd say Safeco Field and Camden Yards are my 2 homes.
And you were born and raised in Seattle, so Safeco is kind of like your mothership, right? It's the deluxe car after the Kingdome.
It is. You know what? The Kingdome is really my mothership. I love that place beyond belief. But Safeco is an amazing stadium, and it's absolutely, although I live, you know, 2,800 miles from it. It's absolutely my baseball home. But Camden Yards, which I live about 2 hours from, is just outstanding. It is a place that, you know, I make sure we get down to 4 or 5 times every season.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot and make you think. Safeco, okay. I was there a couple weeks ago. It's beautiful with a retractable dome, and they cheat a little. They can close the dome, but you can still feel the atmosphere. It's not like, okay, the mall is closed now. You can't feel what's going on. Camden yep. Yards is an open-air stadium, you know, a retro ballpark. If you had to pick one, what's more magical for a baseball experience?
Ooh, that's difficult. I mean, for me, I'm always going to say Safeco Field.
Okay.
I think that for an objective, non-biased viewer, people would probably say Camden Yards. I mean, Camden Yards, I don't think there's much beating it.
Camden Yards is beautiful, and the only deep thought that I'll tell you is when you connect Camden Yards to the Inner Harbor,
mm-hmm.
that's more exciting than Safeco connected to Pioneer Square.
Baltimore is an interesting place to me because I've been there many, many times, but I have only been to Camden Yards. I have actually done nothing in Baltimore but go to Camden Yards.
Okay.
I do understand that the Inner Harbor is a huge attraction, and
right.
I've obviously driven by it, and it looks very nice. And it's right there, really. The area of Safeco Field is, you know, sort of out of the city to the south and a little,
right.
you know, starting to get a little industrial.
Right.
And I think that, you know, the Inner Harbor is a different vibe than Pioneer Square.
Right. I agree. Now, let's talk about fatherhood. I've got 7 kids. You have 2 kids. We take these kids on baseball vacations. Does your wife love baseball or does she like baseball?
I'd say she tolerates baseball.
Tolerates. Okay.
She goes probably only to 3 or 4 games a year with us. She's a stay-at-home mom, and baseball is a great thing for us because, you know, there's maybe 6 or 7 stadiums within a couple hours right. of our home, so I can give her a day off, you know, to
right.
to relax by taking my son, you know, on a Saturday or a Sunday to a game, and it works out to be a great experience for me and my son. And my wife gets to, you know, get done what she needs to get done.
Sure. Now, often when I take my children on a baseball vacation, a non-baseball event will accidentally become the highlight. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, it has. I'll tell you what, I'm a baseball guy, so I absolutely love the baseball aspect of every trip. A couple of things that we do. Oftentimes when we go on a trip, we camp. It doubles as a sort of a camping outing. Tim really enjoys that. And just so you know, my younger son is only a couple weeks old. hasn't got in on the baseball experience yet. He's set to have his debut on October 1st at Safeco Field. Just actually a couple weeks ago, when the Mariners were in New York, Tim and I went up there for the weekend, and we did, you know, the tourist, you know, the city as a tourist. We
right.
went to the game. But other than that, you know, we actually had a hotel right at Ground Zero to, you know, see what that whole area is about. We went through Central Park. We actually, you know, played baseball together in Central Park, which he absolutely loved. We went through Times Square at night, thousands and thousands of people, you know,
right.
bright lights. I mean, he'd never seen anything like that. And then we went up the Empire State Building at about 11 o'clock at night. It was an amazingly full day. We left our home in Pennsylvania at, you know, 7 a.m.
Right.
And my 4-and-a-half-year-old was still up, you know, enjoying the day, you know, beyond belief at 11:30 at night.
No, New York's a magical place, and I would especially caution baseball PhD listeners to budget a couple days for New York. I mean, New Yankee Stadium is spectacular, and the city is just as spectacular.
I agree. I mean, New York is fabulous.
And if you don't want to spend any money in New York, even though that's an oxymoron, go to Central Park and just sit there and take in the beauty and spend a couple hours thinking to yourself or throwing a frisbee around with your kid. That's always been a highlight for my family. They love Central Park.
Yeah, I'll tell you, when we were pulling out of the city the next day, Tim was begging us to go back to Central Park for, you know, for a little more playing around.
Right.
You know, not just the baseball, they have wonderful rock structures they can climb all over, play sets. He's a huge fan of play sets, which are actually making their way into baseball fields as well.
Right.
He couldn't get enough of Central Park.
We are going to put a link on our website to your website so that people can see your 10,000 photos and get an idea of what to expect when they're going into a new thing. Todd Cook, thank you for being on Baseball PhD.
Thank you for having me.
Next up, it's time for three guys who have outgrown swing sets but still love Central Park. It's time for the wise guys as they battle it out over Mariner history. Welcome to another edition of Baseball History with the Wise Guys. Wise Guys, how are you today?
Good. Amazing.
Are you guys ready to battle it out over the Seattle Mariners?
Yes, we are.
Now, you're a little bit of a disadvantage. You've read about the Mariners. You watch the Mariners. You play Xbox 360 baseball games, seeing Safeco Field. But your parents haven't taken you to Seattle yet, correct?
Yes.
So is that your constitutional right to go to Seattle?
Yeah.
So we're going to battle it out. Are you ready for your first question?
Yes. Yeah.
And let's remind our listeners, right now we're in a pennant race. We have what, and I don't know, tied with 3.5 points, and who with 3.0. So who, are you ready to take first place again by winning this edition?
Okay.
Here we go. First question, you're going to answer it who? Number one. Seattle had a major league team that moved to Milwaukee in 1979. What was the name of that team when it was in Seattle? I'm going to give you four choices. A, Mooseheads. B, Mariners. C, Pilots. D, Aviators.
Mariners.
You say Mariners? What?
B.
You see Mariners?
Mariners.
Wrong! It was the Seattle Pilots. The Seattle Pilots. Why? Because aviation is so important to Seattle. And they had a company there named Boeing that makes the airplanes that you have flown in. Next question. Number two. How many World Series have the Mariners won since they entered the American League in 1977? A, one. B, two, C, three, or D, none. How many World Series have the Mariners won? And we're going to start with I don't know. One, two, three, or none?
Three. None.
The correct answer is none. The Mariners are one of the three major league teams who have never won a World Series. Number three. What was the first year that the Mariners won more games than they lost? The first year that they won more games than they lost. We're going to start with what, and you're going to get four choices. A, 1982. B, 1987. C, 1989. Or D, 1991.
1982.
Okay, now we're going to go with who?
1982.
Now we're going to go, I don't know.
1982.
No, 1991. It took them 14 years to have a winning record. You guys are really kicking butt. At the end of three questions, who and what have 1 point, and I don't know has no points. Question number four. Who owns the Mariners? Who owns the Mariners? I'm going to give you four choices. Nintendo of America, Microsoft, Apple, or some guy named Paul Allen. Think that through. Who owns the Mariners? Nintendo of America, Microsoft, Apple, or Paul Allen. We're going to start with what? Because he looks the most confused. What's your answer?
Nintendo.
He says Nintendo. Now we're going to go, I don't know.
Nintendo.
Okay, and what is trashing him, saying you just copied me? And then who?
Paul Allen.
Paul Allen. The correct answer is Nintendo of America. So when you're holding that Game Boy at Best Buy, wishing your parents would buy it for you, think of the Seattle Mariners. They bought it so they could keep the team in Seattle. It was an act of generosity. Last question. Right now, what has two correct answers? Who, and I don't know, have one? I see what getting ready for the kill. Here we go. Last question. True or false? Ichiro Suzuki currently wears number 51 for the Mariners. Was this the same number that Alex Rodriguez wore when he was with the Mariners? We're going to start with I don't know.
False.
Now we're going to start with who?
False.
Now what?
Real.
The correct answer is false. What just fumbled and vomited across the finish line, and what we have is a three-way tie. It's like the NFL and we're kissing our sisters. What are you doing? So at the end of five questions, who has two correct answers? What has two correct? And I don't know has two correct. Next week, Atlanta Braves. Start Googling and learn all about the Braves. Next up, Baseball Bob and his trivia question of the podcast.
Baseball PhD is now on YouTube and Flickr. View our videos on YouTube. The address is simple, youtube.com/baseballPhD. You can see our road trip pictures on Flickr. Our Flickr address is just as simple, Flickr.com/photos/baseballPhD. You can find the links to both of these sites under the My Link section of our website, www.baseballphd.net.
A great Baseball PhD. Welcome to the smartest man we know, Baseball Bob. How are you?
Thanks, Ed. I'm great.
Now, I've been scratching my head thinking about your trivia question of the previous podcast. And that question was, what two teams were added starting with the 1993 season? Baseball Bob, what's the answer?
They were both National League teams. The Blake Street Bombers, as they came to be known, the Colorado Rockies. And the second team that was added was the Florida Marlins, who, interestingly, since they've been added, have won two World Series.
Jeez. And I think both years when they won the World Series, they were the wild card team in the playoffs.
I'd have to go back. I can't remember off the top of my head in 2003. They were in 1997, yes. But it's a great story.
I think they were. All right. So what is the trivia question of this podcast?
Of this podcast, the question is, along with that expansion draft that occurred in November of 1992, the stock teams starting in 1993, the two teams, Colorado and Florida, in the 1992 expansion draft, what almost sure Hall of Famer was selected by the Florida Marlins?
That's a good one. So I will get my Google and Wikipedia out. But until then, thank you, Baseball Bob. We'll talk to you next week. Next up, the close of the podcast as we said goodbye to the capital of the Pacific Northwest and hello to the capital of the South. The Olympic City of Atlanta is next.
Well, from one beverage town to another, we're going from Starbucks to Coca-Cola.
That's right. We're going to the Peach State down to Hotlanta.
And I drink Coke. You know, the past couple weeks, we've been to Napa Valley as I'm sipping a Diet Coke. We've been to Seattle as I'm sipping a Diet Coke. I'm going back to the mothership, okay? Hopefully the Coke is even sweeter. And hopefully cheaper and all that stuff. But yeah, Coca-Cola, it started it all. And what was it, a pharmacist? I think a guy named John Pemberton.
Yes, and you know, there's lots of sweet things in Atlanta. I mean, you've got the Coca-Cola, you got the Georgia peaches, and you got all those sweet southern girls.
Right. y'all and all that. And, you know, I have seven children, and my oldest was born in Gwinnett County, which is a very, very fast-growing county. So I have a Georgia peach at my house who has an Ohio accent. So it's half this, half that. But I have nothing but great memories of Atlanta. And, guys, I'm going to give you a confession. My daughter's 18. I have not been to Atlanta since I went to Atlanta to pick up my firstborn child. And then after I did that, 6 weeks later, my wife got pregnant, and now I have seven children. But I have a great love for Gwinnett County, for Athens, Georgia, for downtown Georgia. And since I adopted my firstborn, beautiful Megan, they had the Olympics, 1996. And the one thing we'll explore next week is, how did the Olympics change Atlanta? Changed Montreal, changed all these other cities that are trying to pay for it, but how did it change Atlanta? So next week, I'm finally going to get my Diet Coke in the mothership.
Thanks for listening to Baseball PhD with Ed Caspudis. If you like this podcast, tell your friends and family to go to baseballphd.net. Be sure to check our archive section for previous podcasts. If you have any brilliant ideas or comments, you can email the show at ideas@baseballphd.net. This has been a Baseball PhD production.